Twitchell's Book One, Dwindling Magic. Written and read by T.D. L. White. Chapter 16. Pond Life. At first, waiting for Collier to either move towards Brighton or to stay still for 30 minutes was almost fun. Nick kept a close eye on the dot with N. Sokolov written above it while doing some routine maintenance on his servers. After a while, though, James's regular requests for updates started to get annoying. Lunch was a nice distraction. The bread and cakes from Rook's bakery were delicious, but only for a short while. Jenny, who managed to occupy herself by working out, finally suggested that James should document all of the portals in his notebooks. "Without the portal book, your notebooks are the only record we have of the symbols," she said. "We may as well make it as easy as possible to use them in the future." James started to object, then muttered something about the bishop saying something similar. After that, there was a constant opening and closing of portals at the end of the table, which was slightly less annoying than James's constant questions about Collier's location. The afternoon pushed on. Elf had finished her latest sewing project and was now working with James on documenting the portals. Collier had spent the day pottering around Twitchell's, and Nick had grown bored of watching the little dot move from C block to the rugby pitches to the dining hall. He zoomed out. The dot with J. Pashley was by the dew pond. Presumably James's badge was still stuck in the end of the log. "I wonder," he said out loud, looking at the dew pond. "Is Collier on his way?" James said excitedly, pausing halfway through drawing a symbol. "When Collier stole the portal book," Nick said, "you weren't there, right?" "Course not," James said. "Otherwise he'd never have been able to take it." "So..." Nick's train of thought waned, then came back to him. "We've put your badge by the dew pond to trick Collier into thinking that you are by the dew pond. And even if he has seen it, maybe he won't come." "Not until..." "I leave the dew pond," James said. "Great point. We should bring the badge back here." Jenny came over from her exercise area. "What if he hasn't seen it yet?" she said. "He's had hours," James said, putting the quill away in his bag. "I bet he's waiting for me to leave so he can sneak over and steal something." He started putting his shoes on by the back door. "There's a good chance he's seen it," Nick said. "I mean, he noticed me pretty quickly on Tuesday night when I was outside C block." "I'll go get the badge," James said. "No harm in testing the theory. We can always try it again tomorrow." Before anyone could object, he hurried out of the house. By the time James came back, lunch was a distant memory, and Nick was ignoring messages from his stomach by learning more about the commercial geolocation server that was outside Twitchell's network. He was sure that this was where Collier was getting the badge data from. But as far as he could see, its security was watertight. "Any movement?" James said, before he'd even taken his shoes off. Nick glanced at the map. "He's back at the rugby pitches." James sighed and put his badge on the table. Jenny had finished stretching and was sitting with Elf, sorting through the notebooks. "Why didn't you label them as you went?" she sighed, opening a book, looking at it for a moment, then closing it again. "Working out where all these go could take weeks." "I wasn't planning on losing the portal book and having to rely on these," James said. "They were just for practicing." "A single word on each page and this would be so much easier," Jenny said under her breath. "I did write some notes," James protested. "Oh yes, like this one," Elf cleared her throat. "Paneer jalfrezi, pilau rice, and Coke Zero. Very helpful." The mention of food caught Nick's attention. "Yes, please," he said absent-mindedly, while stretching his arms above his head and arching his back. The others looked at him. "What?" he said. "I'm hungry." "So am I," James said. "Let's stay here and get a takeaway. I want to be ready when Collier moves." Jenny and Elf agreed. Nick stayed quiet. He'd lost about half of his paying users when his old servers went down, and he still hadn't found a way to monetize his latest vulnerability. Plus, he already felt bad that he hadn't helped pay for lunch. "I thought you were hungry," James said. "I haven't got the money for a takeaway," Nick said quietly. "It's on us," Jenny said.
"You're the guest," Elf said, "and despite the rest of our problems, money isn't something we have to worry about right now."
"Thanks," Nick said. "Yeah, I'd love a curry." Getting a takeaway wasn't quite as straightforward as Nick had imagined. It involved calling a restaurant and pretending to live somewhere else, then having a prolonged negotiation about paying with cash, and then standing in a bush.
"Why couldn't we just get it delivered to the front door?" Nick asked, shifting to avoid a sharp branch that was poking into the back of his neck.
"It's best not to use the front door, unless we have to," Elf said. "I don't want neighbors asking questions we can't answer."
She let out a cloud of vape gas. It smelled faintly of vanilla.
"Here they are. Let's go."
She pushed her way out of the bush and walked quickly down the driveway to intercept the delivery driver, who was getting off a scooter with a big box on the back.
"Is that the chili pickle for number 26? She asked.
The driver checked the address on their phone.
"Yes. You know the code?"
562.
The driver punched it in, then paused.
"Says it's a cash-on-collection order."
Elf handed over the money, and in return the driver pulled two big brown paper bags from the back of his scooter. Elf took one, Nick took the other, and they walked back up the driveway, through the bush, and up through the garden. Dinner was amazing. It wasn't like a curry back home. Nick had never even heard of most of the dishes they'd shared out on the table. But he tried all of them, and even the weird ones that were sharp or bitter or sweet seemed to add something to the overall experience. The boring lentil dal, something he usually avoided, was particularly delicious. He couldn't help himself from mopping up the dregs of the pot with the last of his naan bread. Which is why he didn't even notice his phone buzzing on the other end of the table.
"That your phone?" James asked, reaching out and handing it to Nick.
"Thanks." It was a message from the geolocation server.
"It's Collier," Nick said. "He's on the move. Outside Twitchell's."
"Let's get going," James said excitedly.
"Hang on," Jenny said. "Can we see where he's going?"
Nick took a bite of naan bread and checked his laptop.
"It's just Collier," he said. "Must be in a car. He's going fast. About 2 miles away from Twitchell's already."
"Coming this way?" James asked.
"Yeah, definitely."
"We've got nearly an hour," Jenny said. "It's still light outside, so probably better to walk than portal." Everything they needed was right next to the table. Jenny and James had their rucksacks packed with torches and phones and other things they might need. They were ready to leave in minutes. Nick left his laptop on the table, but had a new alert script set to send another message to his phone when Collier was 2 miles from the dewpond.
"That's all you're wearing?" James asked Nick as they were about to leave. "It's going to get cold."
Yeah, I haven't got a coat with me."
Truth was, he didn't actually own a coat.
"I'd lend you one of mine," James said, "but it'll be much too small. I've got a snowboard jacket that's pretty big, but it's at my house, and my parents think I'm at Twitchell's."
"Hold on,"
Elf said. She went upstairs and came back with a worn-looking brown leather jacket.
"This was my dad's. Looks about the right size."
Nick tried it on, and it was a pretty good fit. A little bulky, but better than a thin t-shirt. They left by the back door. Elf locked it behind them. Nick wasn't looking forward to walking all the way back up the hill, but it turned out they didn't have to. After they got to Ditchling Road, there was a bus pulling into a stop just ahead of them. Jenny ran and bought their tickets. They piled in after her and took position on the top deck, right at the front. The bus took them past the path through the woods, and they cut straight across the golf course and through the hill fort. It was gently uphill and across two fairways, with the low sun blazing at their backs, casting long shadows out in front of them. A group of golfers, two old couples, were slowly dragging wheeled bags across the short grass. Jenny waved at them, and they waved back. James's description of the hill fort was accurate. Just a little dip, then a grassy bank that ran around the top of the hill. They reached the top of the bank and paused. A path ran along it, all the way around the hill.
On their right, the whole town sloped away, blanketing the hill until it reached the sea. On their left were fields and forests, leading to a soft ridge in the distance. "Highest point in Brighton," James said. "Well, that is." He pointed at a weird concrete pillar a little way along the path. "What's that?" Nick asked. "Trig Point," James said. "Used to make maps in the old days." "Come on," Jenny said, looking around anxiously. "This is exactly where the king wouldn't want us to be. Let's go." They cut through the middle of the fort, on a path that was surrounded by high prickly gorse bushes. Lots of tributary paths merged into theirs along the way, some clearly too small for humans, roots emanating from deep within some of the tallest gorse. After they reached the far side of the hill fort, it was downhill all the way to the little clearing and the old log by the dewpond. "There's a good spot to observe from just along here, and one on the other side," James said. "Me and Jenny will take this side, you three take the other." Elf, Cece, and Nick nodded. "And the rats?" Jenny asked. Nick had forgotten about the rats, and he had a tiny glimmer of hope that they wouldn't show up. "I told them to keep an eye out and meet us either here or by the pond," James said. "They know what Collier looks like." The good spot to observe from was behind a small bush next to a large tree. Nick and Elf had to crouch down in damp, earthy leaves to avoid being seen. But James was right about the position. It did have a good view of the path and the old log where the ID badge had been. It was getting dark. The sun was still up, but on the other side of the hill from the dewpond. Around them, the shadows in the trees grew deeper and darker. Of all of them, Cece was the most restless, constantly hopping around from the bush to the ground and tugging at her disguise. Elf ended up pulling off the grey fur outfit, and immediately Cece scurried off into the undergrowth.
"Just don't get seen by any dog walkers," Elf whispered loudly.
Each time he heard a rustle of branches or creak of a tree, Nick felt a sense of unease. He couldn't work out if it was the idea of a showdown with Collier, or the fact that there were two giant rats somewhere nearby. His phone buzzed.
2 miles away," he whispered to Elf, before forwarding the message to Jenny and James.
There was no doubt now. Collier was going to walk right into their trap. Exactly what the plan was for how they were going to confront Collier, Nick wasn't sure. The others seemed completely confident they could handle the situation. And, other than the bit about giant rats, Nick was happy to go along with it. But crouching behind a bush in the darkening woods, he was starting to wonder what he'd got himself into.
"He's coming."
The voice that whispered didn't belong to any of the humans. It was harsh and perhaps a little Scottish, and it came from the heart of the bush they were crouched behind.
"Thanks, Zen," Elf whispered back. "You and Bobby get ready. We might not need you, but if we do, you know what to do."
"Aye."
Nick hadn't heard the creature enter the bush, and he was relieved that he hadn't seen it. Its voice wasn't doing his imagination any favours. At least Elf had said, if they need them. A gentle nudge from Elf and Nick looked up. Sure enough, there was Collier, walking briskly along the path. He was wearing black and looking down at his phone. The screen lit up his blonde hair, making it ghostly white in the dim grey light. A moment later, he passed them and turned toward the little clearing with the old log. With his back to the pond and his attention on his screen, Collier took a few steps toward the rotten log, looked at it, and then back at his phone. He started typing something into his phone, and James stepped out onto the path.
"Looking for something?" James said, with an edge to his voice. Collier wasn't startled. He didn't even look round. He simply shrugged, kept fiddling with his phone, and said,
"Just out for a walk. Lovely evening, isn't it?"
Either what he said, or the way he said it, riled James. "Where's the portal book?" he snapped, walking towards Collier. "We know you took it." The larger boy turned to face James and straightened up. He was at least a foot taller and wider than James, who stopped in his tracks.
"We? You better have some reinforcements to help you."
Jenny stepped out from behind James. Nick whispered. Should we join them? Before Elf could answer, Cece dropped down from a branch and pulled at the girl's hair.
Something's wrong, Elf said. Let's wait here for now.
Back near the pond, Jenny stood next to James. Collier seemed to deflate a little. If you have the book, you should give it back, Jenny said. It's not yours.
It's not yours either, Collier snorted.
So you do have it, James said, raising his voice.
Perhaps, Collier said, his voice calm and even. But I don't want to talk about the book. I want to talk about the key.
Something about his manner didn't make sense to Nick. He'd just been caught in the act, but he was acting like he was in charge. James hadn't noticed and was getting more and more angry.
We're not talking about a key, he shouted. You don't get to choose what we're talking about.
Don't I?
Collier put his phone in the pocket of his jeans, and two figures emerged from the darkness behind James and Jenny. One was Hector, and the other was a brutish-looking girl that Nick didn't recognize. Both of them were brandishing sturdy sticks that they must have picked up in the woods. Jenny turned sideways, keeping both Hector, the girl, and Collier in view. James's attention was fully toward Collier.
Now, Collier said, the portal book is useless without the key to the air. And we can all go home without incident if you happen to have the key to the air with you. In your bag, perhaps.
This podcast was brought to you by me, T.D.L. White. I'll be reading a chapter a week until it's complete.